Well, Neil, welcome to Paris.
Thank you.
Thank you for bringing the movie to France. It's
my
been a
pleasure.
Real treat to see it on the big screen.
Thank you.
So I thought we'd get right into the questions. Where was the initial inspiration to do a documentary on Ed Koch? There are a lot of politicians in New York, a lot of city officials over the years, a lot of mayors.
Sure.
How did that begin?
Well, this was a while ago. It was 2010, 11. And at the time, New York City, Michael Bloomberg was the mayor. He was a relatively popular mayor. But if you follow New York history, which is depicted in the movie, you know, New York came from the ashes. And I think the wisdom in New York at the time and in the country was that Rudy Giuliani had saved New York. That was the narrative. He was running for president. He was a national celebrity. I didn't care for him. And I wanted to, A, show really how the roots of the recovery of New York were in the 70s and during the administration of Koch. I'm a New Yorker. You know, New Yorkers feel about New York the way Parisians feel about Paris. You know, we're very proud and defensive. And so I wanted to tell the story of New York's rise. And also, you know, Ed Koch, a great movie is about great characters, especially documentary film. And he's likable, he's dislikable, he's funny. And so I thought if we could weave his own personal story, which we try to do, with the history of New York, we could create something worthwhile.
And at the time, I believe it's Bill de Blasio's administration when you started doing the research?
I'm trying to remember now. So when I started doing it, Bloomberg was definitely the mayor. Yeah, de Blasio came later. Well, you know, watching it, I hadn't seen it for a while, and I noticed this long roll of credits. Like, who are all these people? And many, you know, we hired people, archivists. And so the way it would work, I guess, we have somebody full-time, and every news organization, again, as it probably is the case here, has old footage. They sell it. There's archive companies or Getty Images. It's a business. And so I don't think I personally did any of that, but we had people who were professionals who could find things. And then, of course, you go with what you got. So sometimes I don't think the footage dictated the trajectory, but, you know, with a documentary, you can't make stuff up. I mean, it's either there or it's not. So, but New York is a big city and they kept pretty good records. And there was a lot of, there were things we wanted to get, we couldn't find. But in general, the answer to a lot of this is going to be money. You pay for it so much per second, so much per minute, and it's not free. And it's not cheap. I felt intimidated, always a little nervous. And so I don't think he ever was at risk of losing control. And so, you know, but his rules were there were no rules. And he was very good. He had one request, which was that we would show him a cut before we locked it up, which we did. And, you know, he took him to the screening room with Diane, the woman with the white hair, and we were silent and bated breath, and he said he liked it, but he didn't ask for any changes. We didn't make any changes. So, but a lot of his friends, these older guys, really were upset with the film. You know, who cares if he's gay? Why do you even mention it? Da 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 da. That whole part, which is like you can't make a film without it. So they were a little pissed off, but he knew. That you have to have a pretty complete picture for the film to make a splash, be seen, get reviewed, all that. So,
I also feel Americans rediscover about their own country watching this because, of course, it's very skewed towards East Coast politics and what's happening in New York City. But you really cover, you know, the possibility of federal default, in the 70s, Gerald Ford, you follow the AIDS mm-hmm. crisis. It really feels both a chronicle of New York City and what was happening more widely, nationally. And yeah, I think you weave that into the edit.
Thank you. Well, you know, there's one character we don't mention in the film who was a larger-than-life New Yorker during his administration, who he hated, who was a huge egotist, who was a bigot, and that's Donald Trump. And I now that all these dreadful things have happened, I kind of wish we had covered it because he had a very good assessment of Trump. He saw through him. He knew he was a BS artist. He hated him. And so with the benefit of hindsight, I mean, I couldn't have known it then, God knows, but I would have preferred to include some of that. There was a funny story where they were fighting. He was fighting with Trump about a tax break, and Trump was pissed and he wasn't getting his way. And he says he's the worst mayor in history. And Koch had a three-word answer. Piggy, piggy, piggy. So, and it just disarmed the whole debate. So Koch was very effective with him. And I think had he lived, because he had huge influence with Jewish voters, older voters, Florida voters, I think he could have affected the election, because I know he would have campaigned very hard against Trump. And he could have turned Florida. Anyway, that's history.
It's history for 2016, and we'll see 2024. Yep. I want to talk a bit about the musical score. It's very varied, diverse score. It follows all three of his administrations, each election. Tell us about how the musical score came about and how you found your composer.
Well, first we had the composer, Mark, and my producer. So you have to understand, I'd never made a documentary before, so I was very dependent on the talents of others. And so my producer did a lot of that. You know, she interviewed the editor, as did I, but she knew who was there. So we hired Mark, was a great composer. And so composer and the editor together really create the music, right? Because the editor has to use the music. In terms of the licensed music, that is the same answer. First of all, is the first question, which is you pay for it. And you pay for a certain amount of seconds and all that. And we want it to be evocative of the 70s and 80s. And we might have gone overboard. You know, I could think we could have used it less, even though people like the music. But there's a cost-benefit analysis. I'm not sure it worked out perfectly. But, you know, the only... Well, there's one funny story, which is... I don't know Paul Simon, but I know people who know Paul Simon. And I ran into Paul Simon at a game once, and I said, hey, I'm blah, blah, blah. And I got in touch with him, and he offered to donate two songs. So we have The Only Living Boy in New York, and we want to do another one. I don't remember. Probably the 59th Street Bridge song. He wanted to donate them, which is okay. But who owns the songs of Simon and Garfunkel? Simon and Garfunkel. And Garfunkel said, no way. I want to get paid. So we had to pay. That's why we only had one. So we paid for the one because Garfunkel needed the money. Paul Simon was going to get donated to us.
In the end credits, Only Living Boy. Well, Neil, really thank you for presenting the film in France. I think it's the first time in Europe, perhaps. Or is it?
Yes, first time in Europe. I may have shown in the UK, but let's say it's the first time in Europe. Yes.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
And it's been a pleasure.
Thanks for having us.